How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Yeah, it's time for the playoffs. Oh, but it's the Hawks. Let's preview it.
It's time. You want the best Celtics talk around? Here it is. This is the Rain and Jays podcast. Here's John and Jay.
We are just hours away, mere hours, from the Celtics tipping off against the Atlanta Hawks in Atlanta. And sadly, Jay King, not in Miami. Your beach time has been denied.
Yeah, I mean, when the Celtics were down 24 at halftime, there was like a 99.5% chance that I was going to be on the beach this weekend in Miami. Instead, here I am in Atlanta, ready for what should be an awesome series between the Celtics and Hawks.
Should be. By the way, has there been a more disappointing, awesome win than what happened on the last night of the regular season? That was an amazing win. That should have been one of the most epic stories in Celtics lore, that huge comeback on the last day of the season, and all it did was drop them up in the playoff seeding.
I mean, I wouldn't call it one of the most epic stories in Celtics lore. There's been some pretty epic stories in Celtics lore. However, it should have been so awesome. And I mean, it was. It was an unbelievable comeback. It was in front of, I mean, Bill Russell was sitting courtside, Bill Walton, Kevin McHale, John Havlicek was there, JoJo White. Like, to do that in front of all those legends was just unreal on the final day of the regular season. And Celtics thought they had home court advantage. I wasn't watching, obviously, on TV. My brother told me that Abby Chin interviewed Evan Turner after the game. He was like, what do you feel about getting the 5 seed? He was like, 5 seed? We still got the 5 seed? So it was one of those wins where it was just remarkable and then kind of, I guess, the worst possible outcome in that you play Atlanta, which is probably the best team of the three teams Boston could have played. And not only that, but you're on the road and you're in LeBron James' side of the bracket. So if you do get by Atlanta, hello, Cleveland.
Yeah. So let's get into this.
Just an awesome, devastating win.
Yeah. So now it puts us in Atlanta. You are chilling at the very high-end Ritz-Carlton because you are a very high-end – because you know why? Because you are a podcast hero as well as one of the best beat writers out there. So – you stay at places that are just nothing short of the best.
I stay at places that are the cheapest, and for some reason, the classiest hotel was the cheapest.
Don't ruin this with your humility, Jay King. Come on.
I am leaving after 3 nights, though, because after 3 nights, the price skyrockets. and then I'm going to the Fairfield Inn & Suites, where I will feel far more at home and around peasants like myself.
So the Atlanta Hawks, like you said, not the best scenario for the Boston Celtics starting on the road. The Celtics have not won there on the road this year. Their lone win was at home. They face a very tough Atlanta Hawks team, a tough starting five for the Atlanta Hawks. So let's kind of get to the meat of this. Real quick, there's two things that we're worried about here. The matchups in the starting fives and the bench versus bench, because I think the bench versus bench might be a big advantage for the Celtics if they can take advantage of that. But the starting five is the Celtics' strength, obviously. With Isaiah Thomas on the floor, they're awesome. Without Isaiah Thomas on the floor, they can be bad. The Atlanta Hawks have outscored Boston's starters by 19. When it's starters by versus starters, Atlanta's starters have outscored Boston starters by 19 this season. So how much of a concern is that? And let's kind of figure out, can the Celtics do anything to fix that? Are the Celtics willing to do something like change someone in the starting five to fix this?
I think that'll be really interesting, because obviously we saw in the last game of the regular season, which was last weekend, Stevens barely played Jared Sullinger. Sullinger only played 11 minutes. It was his season low, and he didn't start the second half even. And I can't remember the last time Sullinger didn't start either half. So that was really interesting. And obviously they went to Crowder to guard Al Horford to start the second half and kind of went on a huge run. So how often does Stevens go to that? How early does he go to that? And is this a series where we won't see a lot of Sullinger? Because Millsap, Horford, those guys are really skilled. They're quick for big guys. They can stretch it out to the three. And obviously that's not Sullinger's strong suit, is guarding guys out there. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest questions to me, is how Stevens handles that. And Sullinger, if you look at his plus minuses against every team, the splits this year, I want to say he was like minus 19. I think that's per 100 possessions against the Hawks this season. And that's one of his worst against any teams all year. So this might not be a series for Sullinger. I don't know. And yeah, if it is, he might be like at the five with a smaller, quicker lineup so that he can guard Horford. You can kind of get away with it more with him on Horford than Millsap. So I don't know. That's a really interesting scenario to me.
Yeah, that's where where I was kind of driving this, is that Sullinger is the candidate to be moved if Brad Stevens wants to change things up. But how does he move Sullinger? What does he do? Who starts either instead of Sullinger, or when you slide Sullinger over, if you want to do that? But then you take Amir Johnson out, and Amir Johnson's started to play well recently, and I don't know if you want to do that, especially when the Celtics are a better rebounding team than Atlanta. Atlanta is not a good rebounding team, and if they become a good rebounding team in this series, then the Celtics are screwed. But the Celtics can have an advantage by hitting the offensive boards. You know, I pulled this stat out. The Celtics have the ninth best offensive rebounding percentage in the league. Atlanta has the fifth worst defensive rebounding percentage. So you combine those things and you have an opportunity for Sullinger or Amir Johnson to get in there and score some cheap baskets, get a couple of rebounds and some putbacks. So when you're struggling to score, that can spur your offense. Not saying that they adjust their style and go nuts trying to crash the boards, but they have an advantage there. So does Kelly Olynyk start? Do you start Marcus Smart and slide Amir Johnson over? Do you start Evan Turner? But then you risk losing an advantage on the bench. So what's the more palatable scenario for you?
I have no idea. but isn't it weird, though, that we're all the way in the postseason, and it's like we're back in preseason again. Like, there are questions about Sullinger and how he's going to fit. And back in preseason, it was like he might not even be in the rotation. Obviously, he's had a good year, and he started almost the entire season. So it's bizarre how that works out. I think this is a series for smaller lineups. I think it's been clear that they've been good with small lineups all year, and I think, you know, Crowder at the four. I think this is a series for Jarebko.
Interesting.
I think Jarebko is going to be a big deal in the series. I don't know how many minutes he'll play, but he has enough length to bother Millsap if Millsap goes down low, and he's quick. He can switch. I think this is going to be a Jarebko series, which is the Cleveland series was kind of a Jarebko series last year too. Like he was really helpful, I thought, against Cleveland last year, even though they got swept. Like he played some really good minutes in that series, and he's kind of one of those players who, because he's so versatile, he can help out. He can guard a lot of guys. It's tough to find a matchup where a guy can pick on Jarebko, whereas Sullinger, there are some bad matchups for him. So This might be a Jarebko series. I'm excited for the Jarebko prospects.
Is this you just it sounds like you had this realization like as you were speaking.
No. I've considered this a possible Jarebko series for a while. One other thing I've been thinking about, how different are the Celtics now from last season? Like, on the surface, it seems like they're so similar. All they did was sign Amir Johnson and get rid of Gerald Wallace, who never played. But now they have Crowder and Thomas in the starting lineup. Sullinger last year was complete shell of himself after the stress fracture in his foot. You've got Evan Turner, who's playing so much better. So much about them. Tyler Zeller, who started last year, might not even be in the rotation this series. So it's like so much about them is different. And I think they're better and more flexible and more versatile, which should help them in the playoffs, especially against a team like Atlanta, which is really flexible and versatile and can really attack you in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, so with the Celtics, now let's explore this Jarebko thing a little bit. So if he plays more, that just means Sullinger plays less. So how do we do this? Do we start Olynyk? I've been thinking about starting Olynyk here. And the reason is not necessarily for guarding anybody in particular, but I'm trying to figure out what the Celtics do with Paul Millsap. He is a matchup nightmare for them. That you can't, Sullinger can't guard him, and I'm not saying that Olynyk's going to be able to guard him at all either, but what Olynyk can do on the other side is at least be a legitimate threat to get him out of the paint. Millsap is the only player in the NBA to be top 10 in blocks and steals. So that is a problem for Boston. That guy needs to be pulled out of the paint. He needs to be minimized as much as possible when Boston has the ball. And I think Sullinger not truly being able to go out there and stretch the floor and taking most of his shots in the mid-range. What do you think about starting Olynyk?
I mean, I don't think Stevens will do it right away. I think he'll give his starting lineup a chance. I do think this is a tough series because the thing about Millsap that makes him so tough is he's not one of those massive centers like, you know, Hassan Whiteside, where you're like, okay, drag him out to the perimeter and then he won't be quite so comfortable. He's one of those guys, even if he's on the perimeter, that guy's a handful. He's kind of like not at Draymond Green's level, but kind of Draymond Greenish in his ability to guard the post and the perimeter and really give guys hell in either situation. So Millsap is a problem. Millsap, I mean, he's had an unbelievable defensive year. It's possible he could be first team all defense, although that'll be really tough with obviously in the front court you've got Kawhi Leonard and Draymond Green who are pretty much no brainers. But the Hawks have the number one defense since the All-Star break, and he's a huge part of it. Al Horford's a huge part of it. Those guys, I've watched. When I've watched the Hawks this season, I've thought to myself, imagine what the Celtics would be like with Millsap and Horford. Because just with their versatility, their ability to shoot, that would be, I think that the Celtics, like if you could mash the lineups together, the Celtics would kind of be pretty scary.
Yeah, I mean, if you just pluck the two best players from the four or five seeds, you know, just put them together in a team, they'd be pretty good.
And then, you know, take Schroeder off the bench, and then, you know, clearly that won't matter too much in the playoff matchup.
Well, you know, maybe you know, in game four they can just kind of make it interesting and just like switch jerseys, mix it up.
Yeah, throw on a penny.
Yeah, why not? There's no rules against that. Let's look at the one thing that people are really curious about is the injuries, because Isaiah Thomas is out there icing his wrists after every game all of a sudden, and Jay Crowder has that right ankle, high ankle sprain that he says it's fine. He says I'm fine. I'm ready to go. He's not gonna let on anymore. I bet you he doesn't want to talk about it at all.
He's admitted like he's limited.
So a limited Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas with the wrist issue, like that doesn't sound good at all. Like I'm not. We came into this postseason, or actually we came into this season thinking this is the year we make that one extra step. You win a playoff series and you move forward. And now here we are against the team that matches up that we match up poorly against, with our best players injured or to some degree a nagging injury. This is the math here isn't good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like those guys are going to be useless. Obviously, Isaiah's going to score a lot of points. Crowder is going to guard basically anybody on their team for at least stretches, and they're going to both have good series. The thing about this is these teams are really evenly matched, and it's so close, and the Celtics are already – they don't have home court, so they're already at a disadvantage there. And then throw on top of it that they have these little nagging injuries, and that's something that could throw the series the other way. And obviously, you know, it may not happen that way. There's absolutely a chance Isaiah goes out and averages 30 in this series. There's a chance Crowder has a monster series, like switches onto Millsap starting at game two and just makes a huge difference. You know, it's not definite that these guys are going to just like limp their way or botch layups like Isaiah did last time he played Atlanta. But that being said, having full health and 100% health would be far more, you'd be far more confident with it that way. I think back to like the Raptors last year where Kyle Lowry wasn't healthy going into the playoffs and, you know, they had a pretty good season and then just got rocked in the playoffs because their best player wasn't playing nearly the way he was capable of. I don't think Isaiah's injury is that serious. I don't think Crowder's injury will limit him to the extent that it'll be like complete destruction or devastation. But obviously it's a concern going into the series.
Okay, let's get to some of these Twitter questions because we're kind of touching on some of these things. We'll start with Alan, who asks, who should play most at power forward? Sully, Crowder, Johnson, Olynyk, or Jarebko? Millsap seems like a bad matchup against all of them. We've kind of talked about that a little bit. But of the minutes distribution, let's kind of just polish off. Let's put a little bow on this conversation here. How much does Sully really play? And then how much – or do you just give him a chance? Do you roll out the starting lineup as usual tonight when they go jump center – Sullinger's out there, and how much of a leash does Brad Stevens give him? And then who ends up getting? You just think that Jarebko ends up getting the majority of his minutes.
I mean, you have to try the same starting lineup you've used for the last 70 some odd games. I don't think you can just go away from that without giving it a chance in the playoffs. That being said, you got to have a short leash. Last year against Cleveland, if you can remember, Crowder was by far the Celtics' best chance to guard LeBron James. It wasn't even close. Like, clearly their best chance to guard LeBron James. He didn't start until game four. And when you look back at that series, I think that was Stevens' biggest mistake, was that he didn't switch up the starting lineup quickly enough, and they started every game with Evan Turner on LeBron James. And Evan Turner, you know, he's become a good defender, but Crowder's way better matchup in that scenario. And it took Stevens until game four to change that up. Now he has a postseason under his belt. I think probably he'll be quicker to switch things up than he was last year, knowing that there's no time. If your lineup isn't working, you have to switch it up immediately because four losses and you're gone. That's it. You're going home. So I don't think he'll have a long leash at all. I think if that starting lineup doesn't come to play in game one and show that it can handle all of Atlanta's flexibility and skill on the perimeter, especially, then he's got to switch it. So
yeah, I agree. I agree that that's I mean, we're like you said before, we're back at the beginning, where it's Sullinger is on, could potentially be on the outside looking in. So it's so weird. It's so weird how the season can go, but it is what it is. But and of course, if we're gonna look back at the beginning, then watch Sullinger come out there and drop like 22 points tonight with 9 rebounds and have a huge night. And we're gonna tomorrow do a podcast and talk about how great Sullinger was and how wrong we were for 45 minutes.
Why didn't Sullinger play more minutes?
Yeah. So, who knows? It's just the beauty of basketball consistently making us look bad. If anybody cared to go back and check at the things that we've said and how wrong we've been about some things. So, but whatever. Keep listening, everybody. Yay! Podcasting. So, David asks a question that's also asked by a couple of other people. And I'll pull those up. Which Boston player that plays a decent amount will have the best and who will have the worst series against Atlanta? Eric asks a similar question. What young player will have the biggest impact on the postseason? I don't go into that one. I don't know if any rookie's going to get in there unless there's an injury.
I mean, so, if we're talking just young players, Marcus Smart.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, we can include him in young players, right?
Yeah. Well, we can include all of them in young players, really, because, you know, Isaiah Thomas is a 27. He's a young player. I mean, come on. So let's be real. But I know what the question's asking. If you're looking at Rozier or Hunter or anything like that, I doubt if those guys are in, that's a break glass in case of emergency situation.
Yeah, no.
I don't want to think
those
about
guys.
That.
Those guys are only playing if the Celtics need some sort of energy boost. And even then, when they go in, you'll be like, Brad, what are you doing, man?
Right, right. But to your point, yeah, Marcus Smart, second-year player, obviously he's going to be that. That's the answer if you're going into young players. That's the guy.
Yeah.
But as far as which rotation player will have the best and who will have the worst series? So I feel like the worst series we're leaning towards Sullinger because that's what the matchup has said, right?
Yeah, although Sullinger has a way of whenever you doubt him, he shows again that he's a big, skilled rebounder and good player. So every time people kind of start to doubt him more, he kind of shows like, yeah, guys, I'm still the same guy who's made a difference ever since I got to Boston. So I'm not convinced he'll have a bad series. I'm not convinced it's not the series for him. But got to have a short leash on him. I do think Marcus Smart has a chance to be an absolute series changer one way or the other, because the way Atlanta guarded him the last game, and he hit 4 threes in the first half, they were completely abandoning him. Like, absolutely, his guy was like 20 feet off of him. They were praying for Marcus Smart to shoot threes. So if he finds a way to pull his jump shot out of the garbage and and turn it into and make some shots, that is huge, because it'll give him more spacing. He'll get easy points because, literally, they were playing. They couldn't have played further off him. So that'll be, I think, something to watch in this series, is whether Marcus Smart can drag his jump shot out of the sore and kind of finally start hitting jumpers on a consistent basis. If he can do that, and he hasn't shown many signs of it except for that one stretch after the snow day, but I think he's a big factor in this series, whether he can make them pay, because Evan Turner's not going to make you pay. He'll barely shoot it. Marcus Smart will shoot it. He'll fire that thing up, and if he makes something, that changes the series.
I will say that I think Evan Turner has that potential to be a series changer, which marks, by the way, the full season coming around on Evan Turner on my part. We have gone the full 82 games. We are now entering the playoffs. We're in that sweet spot before the playoffs have begun. My full turn has happened, 180 degrees, because their bench is their weakness. Atlanta has a bit of a thin bench, which means the Celtics bench has an opportunity to really do some big things. And we know that the Celtics bench plays its best when Evan Turner is doing Evan Turner things, getting his mid-range shot and hitting that mid-range shot, that little turnaround fadeaway post-up that he does, but also passing, distributing, getting guys those open shots. So I think part of – we could both be right here because Marcus Smart could be the guy that has this where the hell did that come from type of series, but it could be Evan Turner that's setting him up for those. So this bench – could be the key to the series when you look at, I don't want to make a big deal about these injuries, but still some limitations on Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder and whatever is going on with Jared Sullinger. If he continues to have problems, the bench, if they're coming in and the Celtics are down 5 or down 10, and if the bench can take advantage of whatever matchup situation they have, then yeah, Evan Turner, Marcus Smart, Kelly Olynyk could be huge for the Celtics this series. If he's hitting threes and that bench can make up leads, or if it's tied, can give the Celtics a lead, that will be huge. So I'm looking at Evan Turner. If he has a good series and is playing basketball like he had been post All-Star break, then that could be what changes the series. Everybody's going Atlanta in 7, Boston in 7. Everybody looks at, I've read a million previews here, and no one can really put their finger on this series. So everyone's just kind of saying, I guess Boston in 7? No one thinks it's going to be an easy series for either team. And then you just kind of figure out who might have a slight advantage here or there, and that's the team you pick. So they could swing this series. If it's that tight, that even, that bench is going to be, I think bench and rebounding is going to be where this series is won. If the Celtics can win the rebounding and make Atlanta look like the bad rebounding team that they are, and if the Celtics bench can go out there and take advantage of Atlanta's bench, then the Celtics can win this series, and they can do it in 7.
I love how far you've come on Evan Turner. We had a full episode earlier this season.
Absolutely.
Where I think you spent probably 47 of minutes of the hour just ranting about Evan Turner, just torturing his soul, his very existence. And now here we are, the day the playoffs start, and you have playoff confidence. You have playoff confidence in Evan Turner. You think he is going to be the difference. He is going to put them over the top. He is going to send the Celtics to the second round.
Well, look, he's earned it, and I still say before it was justified. Now, you've made the good point about Lee being the guy that clogged up that space, and putting those two on the floor together was bad. And that made both of those guys bad, and Evan Turner was bad earlier this year. So, but he has earned it. And I'd like to just try to make it clear that I'm being fair and just saying what I see. So I see what Evan Turner's doing. It was never anything personal. I think Evan Turner, since Lee, post-David Lee, Evan Turner has been really, really good and really, really important. So, there we are.
There we are. I think it'll be interesting to see what Stevens does. Does he shorten the rotation? Does he keep the bench together? Because obviously the Avery Bradley plus bench mob unit have been really good this year. And does he give that group the same amount of minutes? Does he keep the starters in there for longer?
Well,
it'll be interesting to see what he does with that.
I don't think he shortens, because shortening the bench to what? Like, you don't – the only guy
– I think Zeller's out, right?
This is not – it's not Zeller series with an asterisk, knowing that anything can happen with Brad Stevens. And if Sullinger is completely – like Jared Sullinger is so funny here, because he can be, as we've said throughout this past half hour at this point – he can be like the worst player on the Celtics in this series, but we all know that as soon as we say he's going to be the worst player, he will go out and potentially be the best player for the Celtics this series. But if he is the worst, then, and he gets like benched and we're back at the start of the season where he's on the outside looking in, then who knows? Maybe Zeller does get some minutes. But right now, I don't think this is a Zeller series. The problem is the Hawks' bigs are too mobile. They're just too versatile. And it's hard. Who does he guard? And how does he guard that person? Like, I just don't see it. So I think Zeller is out. And then, you know, the Rozier, Hunter, those guys who had gotten some minutes, those guys are out. So, but everyone else is important. You just made the case for this being a Jarebko series. That's the next guy on the chopping block when you say shorten the bench, right?
Yep.
You're not going to shorten the bench with the guy that Jay King says is potential difference
maker. You can't. When Jay King labels, actually, everything I predict goes wrong. Like, it goes completely the opposite way. Dating back to college, we used to watch League Pass, my roommates and I. We used to watch League Pass every night. And I swear to God, every single thing I said, if I said someone was having a great game, I'd be like, hey, Brandon, come on over. Watch like, Brandon Roy's having a hell of a game. He would miss, like, his next 8 shots. Like, it was unreal. It's always been like that. So expect Jarebko to be a complete zero in this series now that
don't sell yourself short. I know that Brad Stevens is pacing the floor, waiting, saying, when is Corrales going to finish editing this podcast so I can hear what Jay King says?
Yeah, he was pissed we didn't get it out before shoot around so that they could have a little time to work on our pointers.
Yeah. So sorry, Brad. But you're gonna have to figure this out on your own. I hope you're okay. What else? We've got a couple other Twitter questions. Then we're gonna wrap it up soon because you actually have to go do your job that pays you. Who needs to be the Celtics' second leading scorer versus Atlanta to win? That comes from at Old School Shoes. I don't care as long as somebody steps up and scores.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like they just have to find some way to score, and some way to score specifically when Isaiah Thomas is on the bench, because even when he didn't have a great series at all against Cleveland last year, when he was on the court, they were a completely different team. And it's been the case since he got to Boston. He just breaks down defenses. He puts so much pressure on teams that just by virtue of him being on the court, they are different. And they need to find a way to score when he's not out there. Hello, Evan Turner. Hello, Marcus Smart. Jarebko, step up. I think Kelly Olynyk too will be big for them.
Yeah.
Because he's the type of guy, when teams switch, he is dangerous because he can put a smaller guy in the post. He can take bigger guys out to the perimeter. And when teams switch, you saw it against Golden State when he had 28 points against them and was just kind of destroying Sean Livingston on switches down low. He can be really, really dangerous when teams switch. And so I think him being aggressive, Olynyk, and really making an impact and trying to make an impact all the time when he's on the court would be huge too. So I talk about possibly shortening the rotation, and then I'm like, this is a Jarebko series. Olynyk could have a big thing. Marcus Smart's the X factor. Evan Turner had a great year. You know?
Right. No, it's true. So, that's the Celtics strength. You just can't take away from that strength. And so, look, they play today. They don't play again until Tuesday. So minutes aren't an issue. They'll have a couple of days off. And then after Tuesday, they play on Friday. So you have another couple of days off. So this is why people say you shorten the rotation, but the Celtics need all of these guys. This is why they're so good, because they've had all of these pieces. We've said it from the beginning. The best, when the Celtics play their best, it's because all of these guys are doing all of these things, and it's like a bunch of gears making the clock work. That's why the Celtics are good. So who's second in scoring doesn't matter. One day it'll be Avery Bradley. It's whoever Kyle Korver is guarding. It could be Jay Crowder. It could be Kelly Olynyk off the bench. You know, he could have 5 threes in a game. That is not impossible. It could be Evan Turner. Evan Turner might even hit a three in a game. Marcus Smart might hit a couple of threes. Like, these things are all possibilities here. But when you look at the Celtics winning a game in this series, it'll be Isaiah Thomas with 22 points and then 3 or 4 guys with 14, 16, 12, And that's where it's going to be. So the second leading scorer for the Celtics could be four guys all tied with 14 points. And that'll be good. That'll be a good thing for Boston.
Yep. And then Sullinger with like 30 because we doubted him.
With 10 offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
I think it's possible for all we know. Jeez. Well, all right. Let's wrap this up in the next 10 minutes here because you got to go. Let's figure out this series. What happens, Jay? Let's put our prediction hats on. How does this series go?
Atlanta in 7.
Wow. Well, it was nice knowing you, Jay. All the fans are going to. Now, I think, okay. I'm gonna say Celtics in 7.
Ooh, a road win in game 7.
A road win.
That would kind of be classic this team though. You know, like going into game 7, obviously being on the road and then toughing out a victory and like forcing 21 turnovers in the game. That would be classic 2016 Celtics if they did something like that.
It'll be like they steal one of these two games and have a chance to win in game 6 and they blow it somehow. And we will get on this podcast and lament the fact that they've blown their chance to put a team away and get to that second round. And we're going to have that negative cloud, and then they're going to go out and they're going to win.
Yeah, and then you'll rant about someone for 25 minutes, and then they'll have
that person will go out and have a great game
7. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. That's my contribution to this little run of the Celtics. I cosmically inspire people by ranting against them. Look how good Evan Turner's been. I spent the first part of the season just laying into him, and he responded by becoming a pretty good player.
It was all
you. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Entirely you. Nobody Jeez. Else deserves credit for that.
Show a little bit of gratitude, people, for my contribution to this.
Yeah. Everybody send thank you notes to John for Evan Turner's run at sixth man of the year.
Okay, let's just move on here. So I have the Celtics moving on. Do you we have one more question here. Just to take this to the rest of the NBA, which team from the East do you think has the best chance to beat the Warriors in the NBA Finals?
Nobody.
Obviously, it's Boston.
Nobody. No, I Cleveland. Nobody has paid attention to the last month of LeBron James. He has been ridiculously good. Like, he's had an unbelievable last month, and nobody has noticed because there was the whole Kobe thing. There were the Warriors. The Spurs were going for a while, potentially looking at 41-0. LeBron is out of his mind right now and in an incredible place heading into the postseason. So Cleveland, if anybody does it, but nobody's going to do it.
I think that'll be the case. The best chance for the Warriors to get knocked off is going to be the Spurs.
I think obviously. It's the Thunder.
You think so, huh?
And I don't know. I don't think the Thunder will get by the Spurs, though.
Probably not.
But I think the Thunder present tougher matchups for Golden State than the Spurs do. Maybe I'm crazy there. I could be completely crazy because the Warriors just won 73 games. There aren't many tough matchups for those guys. One question I do have. If the Celtics do not win this series, do you think that mars their season and leaves you with a bad taste from this season?
Not to the extent that it would have if it was a different team. It will, to a little point, simply because they had their chance in the regular season to avoid this situation. That's what's going to be what bothers me the most. Not that they lost to the Hawks in the playoffs, because this is a bad matchup for Boston. And they can obviously win the series. I'm giving them my little bit of a green goggle prediction, but they can win the series, but if they don't, they lost to a pretty good team. And I'm not going to hold that against them. What I will hold against them is that Charlotte game, where they had an opportunity to be the 3 seed, and they let that go, and they let it go in a pretty spectacular way. So that game bothers me more than anything.
And then the 12-point collapse against Atlanta the game before.
Yeah, but that, I mean, yes, that also is not great. But again, Atlanta's a good team. Charlotte's a good team too. Obviously, they finished with the same exact record, but that was a team that if they had gone out and played well and lost, whatever, that's just how it goes. The way they lost that game was really, really bad.
Yeah,
that really bothered me.
That was probably the worst effort of the entire season.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a 31-3 run. That was disgusting.
Terrible.
Disgusting.
At home. With an opportunity to seize control. This wasn't a middle of the season, you know, kind of muddling along and you have a bad effort. Teams lose to bad teams in January. Whatever. That stuff all evens out. The Brooklyn losses and the Lakers loss are evened out by the Warriors win and the Cleveland win. That stuff doesn't bother me. When you're at home with a chance to take control of your playoff destiny and be a three seed and have home court advantage and get a more favorable matchup, and you lay an egg, that 8-minute egg that Brad Stevens called it, that is probably the most inexcusable part of the entire season to me. And so if they lose this series, it's because of that, and that's what really bugs me. So hopefully we can get past this series and into the second round, but that will hold a little bit of a negative to me, but it's not necessarily the loss to the Hawks that'll do it.
Yeah, to me, it doesn't. I mean, no matter what happens in this series, they've developed, they've made progress. Isaiah became an all-star. Crowder became one of the best two-way wings alive. You know, up and down the roster, guys progressed. So it doesn't change. I think the one thing is if you do beat Atlanta and you get to the second round, guys, you know, potential free agents, everybody else in the NBA is like, whoa, you know, they just beat Atlanta. This young team with nobody older than 28 knocked off Atlanta, has a ton of cap space, has almost a coin flip to see whether they get a top three pick. You know, all of a sudden their progress looks better from the outside. I think from the inside, like, it doesn't matter. They've made whatever progress they've made, it's been done. And that doesn't change regardless of what happens in this series. But I just think externally, when people are looking in at it, it looks a little different if they get out of the first round. And especially if they beat the Hawks, who won 60 games last year, have two all-stars, have two other guys who were all-stars last season. So that, I think from that vantage point, it would be big to beat the Hawks. But otherwise, you know, Hawks are just a really good team. And to beat them, you're going to have to be really good. So should be a fun series. I'm really looking forward to this series.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We hope it goes seven either way. And we hope the Celtics put up a huge fight and maybe give themselves a chance to win. But we will see, and it starts tonight. So enjoy our preview. Enjoy the basketball. We'll see you next time.
This is going to be one of the most epic series in Celtics lore.
Yes. Yes.
No doubt.
We hope. All right. This has been the Rainy Jays Podcast. See you next time.
Fall has arrived at JCPenney, the perfect time to refresh your home. From now until Sunday, get up to 50% off select comforter sets, furniture, and the most comfortable mattresses from top brands like Tempur-Pedic, Sealy, Beautyrest, and more. And save 50 to 60% on select sheet sets, plus an extra 15% with your coupon on select home items. Hurry, end soon. That's getting your pennies worth. JCPenney. Coupon valid 9/28 to 10/9 on select home items, furniture, and mattresses. Prices valid 9/28 to 10/1. Selections vary by store while supplies last. Fittings on regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. Some exclusions apply. See store or jcp.com for details.